Hello and welcome to Spin Unspun, the podcast about leaders and leadership in the world of corporate affairs and corporate communications. I'm Damien Rees from Instinctive Partners, in conversation with the best and the brightest in corporate affairs, asking all the questions and discussing all the topics that really matter to people who shoulder the weighty responsibility for corporate reputation and effective communications. Today, I'm delighted to be joined in the Instinctive studio by Matt Ridsdale, Group Chief Corporate Affairs Officer at Sky, the media and entertainment giant. Matt, welcome to the podcast. Thanks very much for your time.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
And also joining me today is my Instinctive co-host, Katie Gabriel, an account director here at Instinctive. Katie, welcome. Great to see you.
Thanks, Damien. It's good to be back.
Matt, first of all, kick off. Just summarise for us how you got to be where you are at Sky.
So I started my career at a really small financial communications agency called Binns & Co. It's not around anymore, but I did a couple of years there on a gap year I never left. I then joined Tavistock, a corporate and financial communications agency, and had a brilliant 11 years there. So I joined pretty young, after about 18 months of Binns, and became a director pretty young.
Who was running Tavistock in those days? I can't remember.
Jeremy Carey was the founder and chairman, but Jeremy, so Jeremy was a huge figure. John West was chief executive, and Lulu Bridges, who I think sort of famously has looked after Vodafone since I think it became Vodafone. They were the key people. I joined the board there at about 25. They were enormously generous to me. I then became joint chief exec at about 28, 29. And that was with Joss Simpson, who still runs it. So Joss became like a business partner. We were the next generation to Jeremy and Lulu and others. And we had a great time together running Tavistock, trying to, I guess, change it into the way we wanted to run it. And then I got a call from Camelot, which was a kind of unusual thing in that for anyone who's worked in agency, you've got a huge list of companies you want to go and win. And Camelot was one I'd never even thought of. So I got a question saying to, you know, a call saying, would you be interested in joining Camelot, the operator of the National Lottery? And I genuinely had to go and think about it. But I reflected that actually it sounded like a big opportunity to join the exec management team there. So I ended up saying yes.
And then Sky, after how many years were you at Camelot?
I did 5.5 years at Camelot. So I joined as, I actually joined as head of strategic communications, although I had the job really briefly. So it didn't have a corporate affairs department. So I joined with, in effect, the media relations team that had previously been reporting to the chief executive. And I joined at a time of significant flux in the management team. So actually, I joined, and within about 3 days, we had a new chief exec, new CFO. So I was kind of joining at a time of big change. And the incoming chief executive, Nigel Railton, said to me very early, I want you to create a corporate affairs department. Okay. So I built assembled the corporate affairs department there and did 5 years before joining Sky earlier this year.
Well, before delving into Sky a bit more, we just wanted to ask you a couple of questions about your time at Camelot, because it sounds super fascinating. Could you tell us a little bit about what happened when you got the job and throughout your time there? So both in terms of challenges and what you achieved while you were in post.
Sure. So I think that change I talked about when I first arrived meant that there was a really big job to do for the whole executive team, which is that there were changes in the management. It was also a time where the business had started going backwards. It had sales that had fallen about 600 million on the prior year.
Wow. So which year was this?
It was, so I joined on April Fool's Day, 2017.
Okay.
I definitely felt like someone was pulling my leg. And so the year had closed in March. So that was the year ended 2016-17. And sales were down about 600 million. The lotto game had not been performing well. And there was a general sense that the National Lottery was going in the wrong direction. So the chief executive that came in, Nigel Railton, was there to sort of do an assessment of what was going wrong and to put in place a plan to fix him. And I think that Nigel and I struck up a terrific relationship really quickly. And part of it was based on the fact that I'd said to him, you know, the more we talk about this, the more I'm not sure we know the answer as to why it's going wrong. I definitely don't know the answer, but I think we need some time. So when we announce these results, I think we need to put our foot in the ball and announce a strategic review, just buy ourselves a window to bring together the right people to go and do the work to work out how do we put the business back on track. So that was the beginning of that journey. We did the strategic review, built a five-year plan and announced it, and then delivered the plan. Actually, we delivered it and beat it, I think, pretty much every year from year two, and did of the 5 years, four of the record years in the history of the National Lottery.
You mentioned a strategic review, which probably strikes terror into the heart of many sort of corporate affairs people when they're brought in to that kind of process by an ambitious chief executive, a new one.
Yeah.
I mean, just explain what a strategic review actually involves. In your case, anyway, in the Camelot case, what did you actually have to do?
So I think it struck terror into my heart after yes. I suggested it, because right. I didn't quite know what it then involved. But I think the main thing was about, having worked in financial communications, I'd seen PLCs say, you know, we're doing a review. Yeah. And it seemed a route not to buy time in a kind of underhand way, but actually to acknowledge you needed to do some thinking, you needed to do some work, and you couldn't guess at the answer. Mm-hmm. So I think that what my job was about trying to create was a recommendation to the chief executive and the chairman to create room for us to do the work, rather than sort of quickly hash out a press release that just about got us through the day. Very fortunately, the chief data officer, Mike O'Donoghue, was, a brilliant operator and had been a McKinsey, very senior at McKinsey. So I found his office pretty quickly.
Right. So you're right here. You found someone to do it.
Yeah, so actually, great. Mike, then between Nigel, the boss, and Mike and others, we kind of brought together the executive team and some of the management team underneath them to then do about a 12-week piece of work to get into the insight of what was going wrong, how we would get sales back on track. And we ended up with a plan that effectively said we were four strands: brand, games, digital, and retail. And it was, how do we restore the brand? So restore the role of the National Lottery in life in the UK. Retail was about fixing the fundamentals of the 44,000 retailers that sell National Lottery tickets every day. Digital, it's a very big digital operation. I mean, huge. In it's about £3.5 or £4 billion of sales a year on mobiles and computers. But it didn't have Apple Pay, it didn't have Google Pay, it didn't have Face ID. So there was some basics to fix there. And the games had sort of slightly gone awry. And so there was a piece of work to update the portfolio of games that people play. So we had this kind of simple framework, did the work, announced the work, and then did it. And I think what was best about it was not that it was based on incredibly shiny new technology. It was quite back to basics, but it was very clear. And I think Nigel rallied an organization around delivering that. And because everyone was clear and because the plan was sound, you did it and it worked and it delivered the results that we promise at the outcome of the strategic review.
I know at Camelot, both corporate affairs and marketing. Could you talk to us a little bit about how you sort of oversaw both of those things?
Yeah, so after we'd assembled a corporate affairs department for Camelot, there came a point where we needed someone to help bring about or implement the changes we'd identified needed to be made in marketing. And there was a gap. And I was really, a stopgap was the answer, is that the Nigel, I think, was looking for someone to do the job. And I looked vaguely like I might know what I was doing about comms or promotional stuff, because consumer PR sat in corporate affairs. So I did the job as a stopgap for a period of about a year or 18 months. And the plan was to go and hire a first-class chief marketing officer. So I did the job, and I have to say, the first time I did it, I found it incredibly hard. Mm. It's sort of a pretty obvious thing to say, but running a department of over 100 people who have all got extensive marketing experience and you have 0 days marketing experience doesn't make you immediately popular with that group. You also you sort of know the fundamentals of what the business is trying to achieve, and you're trying to lead it rather than, you know, do the engineering of how you make an ad and things like that. You were trying to set the standards, set the direction. But I did find it hard. fortunately, I had some really good people in my direct reports there. And I think we managed to make a really good go of it and make some important progress in the first round. But then thankfully, we hired brilliant marketer Keith Moore came in. And he, I think, then took it on to the next level. Unfortunately, Keith then became unwell and had spent some time out of the business. And I picked it up again. And I have to say, the second time I ran it, I enjoyed it much more, mainly because Keith had fixed it, and therefore you were kind of driving a well-oiled machine. But it was an incredible experience. I think you can learn. There's lots of things from marketing I think you can bring into corporate affairs, mm-hmm. disciplines and ways of thinking. But also corporate affairs brings a kind of a unique vantage point because it sees all audiences, not just optimizing for profit or focusing on customers. Actually, it understands the regulatory context and the political context and how reputations are earned or lost. And I think that formula was pretty magic in an organization because it wasn't just me, it was the teams working much more closely together under a single directorate. And while we never merged the departments, naturally, if you have the same sort of the same director or same boss running two departments, then I think teams naturally collaborate more. And I think it was really beneficial to us, but particularly because the National Lottery is a purpose orientated organization. You know, it doesn't exist solely for profit. It was established to raise money for good causes. And I think bringing that was probably our biggest achievement, is bringing a sense that the National Lottery is all about raising money for good causes, that every time someone buys a ticket, something extraordinary happens in the UK, a project gets funded or something has changed. I think that is that we were able to achieve in part by those departments being together.
It's interesting. And probably in large organizations, marketing and corporate affairs probably don't speak enough. And there is certainly a lot more to, I think you're right, a lot more to be learned than not. So at Sky, I think you probably manage a corporate affairs function with a lot of people in it. Tell us how big it is. What do all the people do? And how best does one manage a corporate affairs function of that size?
Well, I'm quite new at Sky, so I'm 6 months in.
Indeed.
So I might have to come and tell you
what are the answers?
a couple of years' time. But the answer is, so how big are we? We're about 250 people in the UK. So I do a group role. I'm responsible across all of the services we offer to customers. So I'm responsible across TV and broadband and mobile. I'm responsible across sport and news and shows. And I'm also responsible across the UK, Ireland, Italy, and Germany. So there's lots of kind of dimensions in that. And some of the department is organized where it's a specialist in supporting news. Some of it's a specialist in supporting broadband. Some of it is clearly colleagues are in Ireland or the UK or Germany. People don't tend to work across those, and I have a small number of group directors. So we're about 250 in London, probably just over 300 overall. And it's because there's lots of those different dimensions, it's broadly split between a corporate side that does things you traditionally expect to find in a corporate affairs department. So corporate communications, internal comms, policy and public affairs, Bigger Picture, which is our ESG program, and it runs a brilliant program called Academy Studios that brings 25,000 school kids into studios each year to show them a future in the media industry and broadcasting would look like. Corporate campaigns, policy and public affairs, and external affairs, which includes events and engagement with stakeholders. So that's kind of a corporate side that feels pretty recognizable, I would think, to most large organizations. And then we have a consumer engagement side, which does social media, all of the social channels that Sky runs, I think with the exception of news. So that is posting content, posting clips and cutdowns from shows and highlights. It's about engaging audiences, whether that's promoting Succession or The Last of Us or whether it's the Premier League football. It also does consumer PR brilliantly. I'm very fortunate. When I arrived, I inherited a really very strong team of group directors. And actually, probably the most important thing was not to land on them like a ton of bricks and say, right, I know how to do this. Actually, was to acknowledge that I had some excellent people, some relatively new to Sky, some 15, 17 years experience, and say, okay, let's just join their team, watch, listen, learn, work out what's going on. They're running a brilliant operation. How is it I can you know, identify things that are frustrating them, that are perhaps a handbrake on them achieving everything they could, trying to make sure we do everything possible to connect the work we do to the success of the organization. So I think it is a broad remit, but, you know, rule number one, have a great team who know what they're doing.
Mm. So I know Sky has seen quite a lot of change in recent years. And of course, it's sort of got relatively recent owners, Comcast. What is the company like, and what were your sort of first impressions coming in 6 months ago?
The company is extraordinary. I mean, the ownership, Comcast ownership is about 5 years old. So Comcast, a brilliantly successful American organization that's famous for owning NBC Universal. So Universal Studios, that made the Mario Brothers film, the Oppenheimer film earlier this year. NBC News, which is globally recognized, and its connectivity business, Xfinity.
So given that breadth of the business, given the breadth of what you do as a job, what are the main or the principal communications challenges that you are grappling with, dealing with, trying to solve? What are the objectives?
That it's complicated.
Yeah.
You know, when it's one thing in one country, and sort of old strategists' idea is it's pretty straightforward to do a single thing in a single country. To do multiple things in multiple countries is hard. So I think the communications challenge is about helping those people who have an interest in Sky, whether they're employees, whether they're politicians, whether they're regulators, journalists, competitors, partners, understand what Sky's all about, understand what we're trying to do, make Sky make sense to the world is not an easy challenge. Not for any other reason than it's very big. It's doing extremely well. It's doing it in lots of countries. So I think driving, understanding and connecting people to what we're all about is a big job. It's hard. So bringing coherence and, you know, marketing might talk about cut through, but making us make sense and then making it resonant so people remember it is harder than it sounds, I think.
So as a leading media and entertainment business, and obviously with the consumer engagement area part of your remit, do you often have to deal with celebrities and influencers? And if so, what have been some of your more sort of exciting collabs? If you've actually had any in the last 6 months, I'm sure you have. But
actually, I've got pretty disappointing stories on that. Oh. So we do work with a lot of on-screen talent. I've met our news readers, which is, you know, very famous faces on TV, whether that's Kay Burley or Sarah Jane Mee or Yelda Hakim, who's about to join us from the BBC. So I've met some of the news talent. Actually, when it comes to movies and series, I think I've been in the same room as Eddie Redmayne, but I wasn't brave enough to say hello. and the team do a brilliant job in supporting that, but I tend to stay out of the way and not ask for autographs.
I mean, it's quite interesting though, isn't it? For someone who's in, you are ultimately responsible, I guess, for reputation management, as it were. We've seen other media companies struggle sometimes with presenters and their, some of their on-screen and off-screen activity. I mean, that presumably is, although, I don't think Sky suffers from that, but that must be something in the back of your mind that's always sort of thinking, I wonder if something like that is going to happen at Sky and how I'm going to deal with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've had both at Camelot and at Sky really interesting conversations about how you really think about risk.
Yeah.
And you cannot prepare for every possible scenario. So what you actually do is in order to do your job in terms of institutional risk management is think about your capabilities, right. Think about processes and say, okay, if this event were to occur or an event like this were to occur, do we know what we're doing? Do we know who we call upon, whether it's agency support? Do we know which teams we need to bring together? Who needs to be in the room when we have that conversation? And what are our points of escalation? I know that sounds really boring, but actually, if you sit in a room and try and think of every possible scenario, you'll never come out the room. So I think it's more about creating institutional capability and good processes. We've got an excellent risk team at Sky who I work closely with. And I think that it's about building institutional capability rather than worrying about whether you've got every single possible scenario covered.
So social media sounds like you've really grasped that discipline, both at Camelot and Sky. And I was looking at your LinkedIn yesterday and going through and seeing some of the interesting sort of social media campaigns you've done recently. Are there any sort of key learnings that you can share with us from over the years?
Hire excellent people. Genuinely, I think that it's an interesting, I was thinking about this last night, actually. You probably find, if you were to do a review of the corporate affairs directors or people in similar positions to the job I do at other large corporates, my guess is it will skew particularly to people who came up through a corporate communications background.
Sure.
Or public affairs background, or perhaps joined the industry from journalism or, you know, the media or politics. Almost none will have come through a social media route. In 5 to 10 years' time, that will change. Mm. There will be people who are sort of social natives, if that's the right word, you know, who came through that channel. And therefore, I think that it'll be interesting to see how that changes corporate affairs later. But for now, hire excellent people, you know, support them to do very good work. Don't make their life harder in trying to innovate, like help create a bit of a culture and a tolerance for some risk and exploring new ways of doing things. I think, though, that while the channel is new, the principles are the same. And I think the main thing I found, having done a marketing job and a corporate affairs job and doing them together, I think is, you know, I have had the debate lots of times as to which side of the fence it falls. And I think my conclusion is that to do social media well, you need to understand it is most akin to earned media. So if you think of paid, owned and earned, well, yes, you boost coverage, but it's not paid. It's not like broadcast advertising or outdoor advertising. It's not an owned channel as much as you think it is. It isn't, because you don't control the medium. So it's most like earned. You're joining conversations. You're having a brand be relevant and resonant with a group. You're there to inform, to entertain, to challenge sometimes. And I think that to view it solely as a marketing channel is an error. And so I think its natural home is in corporate affairs. Mm. Lead with the principles around it being most like earned and being a two-way conversation. But I will be really interested to see what happens to corporate affairs when you get social media leaders rise to do corporate affairs directors' jobs.
You've done a big job at Camelot. You're doing a big job at Sky and corporate affairs. What do you think are the qualities that make a great corporate affairs leader?
From a technical capability point of view, and this may betray the way I do it rather than actually being the correct answer, but I think that I find there is often a desire to race to clarity that doesn't exist. Mm. And I think that helping very senior colleagues at times, but also an organization sort of generally, get comfortable with ambiguous situations, recognizing there probably isn't a correct answer, not racing to make a choice, but actually waiting until you've got the right level of information. That doesn't mean that you will always have perfect information. In fact, you never, almost never do. But it's at what point is time your friend? If I wait longer, I'll know more and then I make a better choice. And at what point is time no longer going to make a difference? So I think holding things in suspense a bit, getting people comfortable with the ambiguous, and then ultimately that then means then having great judgment when it matters. And I think it's something about this unique vantage point that corporate affairs leaders have, is bringing that to bear on behalf of the organisation to make great judgments when it matters.
Who would you say are your mentors?
I think that there are three people who sort of spring to mind. The first is Jeremy Carey from Tavistock. So Jeremy had a profound effect on my career. And when I think about what he did, it's kind of extraordinary. I mean, I was about 20 and sort of expressing great ambition with little plan, I think is fair to say. And he was enormously generous as a sort of coach and mentor. So, you know, Jeremy would sit like after hours and take me through the numbers of the business and how it worked commercially. He would sit there and chat a client issue till 7-8 o'clock at night with never moaning about it. I never really noticed that he didn't moan. I just noticed now that perhaps I'm not as generous as he was with his time. So I think Jeremy was an extraordinary mentor for me in my early part of my career, and I definitely wouldn't have had a chance at Camelot had I come out of agency without his guidance. And then I think at Camelot, both Nigel Railton, but actually the chairman Hugh Robertson as well, both of those two, he was Olympics minister in 2012. He is chairman of the British Olympic Association. He's a former, he had a career in the military. They're really different people. So Hugh is a very calm, very measured, very disciplined leader. And I think being around him pretty much every day for 5 years was a great privilege, because he knew what a crisis really looked like. He worked in government, right? So he'd seen what it's like to be in the, you know, under the cosh with lots of media attention. And I think he was very, very measured, very calm. And I will never forget his advice, which is, often the best thing is to do nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you turn up with, you think that you've got the answer. And he was very, very thoughtful, and I think had the confidence and experience to be able to suggest that perhaps you just see how things play out. I think Nigel, in the era that I was at Camelot, nearly every single person would say that Nigel was an extraordinary figure. He is the most natural leader. He has an ability to connect with people. There are very, very few people I've ever met connect with people like Nigel does. He's kind of wears his heart on his sleeve. He sort of overshares massively, but it's incredibly endearing because he's always honest. He's very straightforward. He's very honest. He's super bright. You know, he started his career in a box off as a box lad on British Rail, like checking the trains in and out. Got onto an accountancy apprenticeship, worked his way up, and I think he's a leader that exemplifies leading with great values, with authenticity, straightforwardness. And there's no question in my mind that what was achieved at Camelot was a function of his personality, his force of will and ability to work through people. So in different ways, Jeremy, I think, just bothered when there was no particular reason to, other than generosity. And I think Hugh and Nigel helped me see different leadership styles, but also the value of those in combination.
So what do you like most about the job? And least,
I hate admin, and I think Nigel was very helpful to me. In he's probably the first person in my career and said, "Stop trying to fix the things you're bad at. Just find someone else to do it with you." So you know, surround yourself with people with different skill sets, different preferences. I'm not sure anyone loves admin, but there are people who are just deeply organized and very good at putting things in order. But I value process. So I'm not completely disorganized. I just probably need. Telling off every now and then. What do I love most about it is, I think, the big picture. You know, I mentioned a couple of times this unique vantage point is, I think that we sit at a very, very, in a very privileged position within an organization. And I think with the exception of the chief executive and the chair of an organization, I don't think any other senior leader has exposure we have to all audiences. Now, maybe ours is shallower. We're sort of broad, wide and shallow, and theirs are sort of narrow and deep. I think that is a great privilege, and I like seeing seeing the whole picture and seeing how all the pieces move in the puzzle as you're trying to get your priorities done, deliver corporate outcomes, commercial objectives.
So if you weren't in corporate affairs and you had to choose a completely different job, your other dream job, what would it be?
I don't have an easy answer to that, other than I think the way I think about it is not that I'm in corporate affairs, is that I used to work in agency and consultancy, then I worked in lottery land, and now I work in media and telecom. So actually the privilege I've got is the variety of exposure I've had to different industries, and corporate affairs is just sort of how I get the job, because I can turn up with a CV that says, you know, this is my particular area of expertise, but ultimately I want to join a management team or an executive team that is, you know, setting about achieving some purpose and objectives in an industry, and learning all about, you know, news and entertainment and sport is a whole new ball game for me from learning about lottery tickets, news agents, and good causes. So I guess I get my variety that way.
Matt, thank you very much for your company today and your fascinating insights. You've been listening to Spin on Spun, the podcast from Instinctive Partners about corporate affairs and corporate communications with myself, Damien Rees, and my co-host today, Katie Gabriel. Katie, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Our guest today has been Matt Ridsdale, Group Chief Corporate Affairs Officer at Sky. Join us again for our next episode of Spin Unspun. Details at instinctive.com. Find us on social media on the usual channels. And if you'd like to get in touch about Spin Unspun, just drop me a line, damien.rees@instinctive.com.